We have been honored today by many dignitaries, and especially by these two people who it is my pleasure to introduce to you. Representative Alice Emmons, who is the chair of the House Corrections and Institution Committee, and who has long been committed to finding solutions to these problems across the different branches of government, which we really appreciate. And to her left, the Chief Justice, Paul Reiber of the Vermont Supreme Court, who has an abiding interest in how the issues of addiction are affecting our families and our citizens. So, without further ado, let's...
Well, thank you, and I'm not sure if it's an appropriate time to come up as the mashup or what. But I am really thrilled to see how many folks have shown up for this conference today. It invigorates us in the legislature to know that there are folks out in our communities who are just as concerned about these issues as we are. And there are legislators here participating today, which I think is very, very important. As was stated, I am chair of the House Committee on Corrections and Institutions, but I also come from a community that has seen a lot of change in the last few years. I come from Springfield, and we have been experiencing a great deal of drug trafficking and addiction issues in the community. And I feel quite strongly that it is time to take a risk. And I think of what the governor was saying, that he's willing to go out there and really take this issue on. And I'd like to give you folks the commitment, and my colleagues in the legislature here the commitment, I'm willing to take that risk. And I'm really willing to really work on this issue. Because I believe strongly that this is not a criminal justice problem. This is a health issue. And we really need to engage. We need to engage our health community in this discussion. What I see happening in corrections is people coming in, and it is not the appropriate setting for the help that they need. And we are creating criminals out of our young folks who need help. And it's a health issue. And it's not just in terms of substance abuse, but it's also mental health issues. And there is a lot more services out there sometimes for women as they go through the process. Because women engage with each other, females go in groups and talk a lot. Males are more isolated. And that's true from the time that they're children. And that may be one of the core issues here, to really look at the difference of how females and males interact within their own gender. Because the males may not have as many services as they go through life as the females, because they're more isolated. And that may be an issue to really look at. So I commit myself to you folks and to my colleagues to really engage in this and talk to your legislator so they become engaged. And I just want to finish with something that happened to me just a few days ago. We as legislators get a lot of phone calls. We get a lot of phone calls from constituents saying, I need your help. I need your help in something. The other morning, I got a phone call from a person. I have campaigned at her door a number of times. And this person, she's probably in her mid-30s, late-30s, I think, has a few children. And she called, introduced herself, and said where she lived, and she said, you know me. I said, yes, I do. She said, Alice, I'm calling you for a big favor. I'm calling you for some help. I said, okay. And she said, I don't know if you've heard about what's happened to me. And I said, no. And then she explained about a family situation. And but I'm expecting a big check tomorrow to help, because I'm going to lose my place where I live. I'm expecting this big check of $5,000. But in the meantime, I'm wondering if you could loan me $140. I was totally blown away. I was going, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. And then she hung up. Later on that day, I was talking to some folks in Springfield at a function I was at, and sort of mentioned this in a generic term, and someone said, oh, I know who that was. That was so-and-so who called you. She has a drug issue. And she's calling people in town to ask for money, $40 or $140 at a time. And I was so stunned that she would call a state legislator who lives down the street for money. I have never received anything like that as a legislator. And it really is upsetting. And it really says to me, we need help. And the person really needs a professional health care person involved here. So on that note, thank you, and please connect with your legislators so we can work on this coming session. Thank you.
I told Anna that was the best argument she's ever made before me. Is there a record here? I don't know. I want to make, I've got a speech. It's not very long. It's about 1,000 words. But before I get into that, I want to explain why I'm here and what it is that I'm doing speaking about this issue. I started in September. I spoke at conference annual meeting of the, I really have to focus on this because it's an acronym and it's very long, the New England Association of Drug Court Professionals. If I got it right, David, where is Karen?
Right over here.
Yeah, she got me involved. Here's the reason, though. The reason is I've taken an oath. I had some young people that I spoke to the other day, and I talked to them about an oath. We were sitting down in, I have a cold. I got it from my granddaughter last weekend. We were sitting down in Newfane for term, I think it was a week ago, there's a group of high school students there. And I talked to them about the oath and the importance of the oath. And it was in a different context than this. But, you know, young people have to understand that you take an oath and it means something. Our oath says that we will defend the Constitution. And then if you look at the Constitution, my responsibility and the responsibility of my colleagues and the responsibility of every judge in this room and those who sit on the bench is to protect the system as well as make independent decisions on issues that come before us. So I have, when Karen first asked me about speaking in September, I was slowly becoming aware of this explosion of substance abuse that's going on in this state. And I started to read more and more about it. I discovered one of my own young neighbors, a good guy, really good guy, who had a great job working as a forester, I think, for Velco down in Rutland County. He's just been sentenced to spend time down in Kentucky for two armed robberies. Why? He's addicted. He's addicted to opiates, apparently. So that's a personal side of this. But the professional side of this is that there has been a growing, burgeoning number of cases that are coming into our dockets in every county in the state. In Windsor County, there's been a tremendous increase in filings. I sat over in juvenile court in Addison County a couple weeks ago, where there's been a huge increase in case flow. Listen, we're in a system of criminal justice where we already have limited resources to apply to these problems. By limited resources, I mean we have limited staff. We don't have all the judge time we need in those courts. It is straining our resources, and by that I mean the state's resources. What does that mean? It means that it threatens access to justice. How does it threaten access to justice? Well, it threatens access to justice because the criminal cases demand constitutionally resources first cut. So if we have to draw resources away from other dockets we have, family court comes to mind, people who are in divorce with children who are waiting to figure out who the kids are going to live with, that sort of thing, that's not right. So I decided I was going to start saying something about this. Karen encouraged me. Again, now, is there a record? I'd like that to be on the record. So anyway, having said that as a preamble, let me read you what I've put together for this event. There's an urgent need for innovative criminal justice programs, and I commend the organizers for drawing attention to the problem of drug addiction with a forum for exchange of ideas today here at Vermont Law School. I commented in September in the remarks I gave to the New England Association of Drug Court Professionals that the classic approach of tough on crime, dating back to Jeremy Bentham, is not working in this area of drug policy. Both the illicit drug trade and the related problem of drug addiction continue to grow with vigor. The problem is manifested in the courts and has had an impact on the entire criminal justice system, prosecutors, defenders, law enforcement, corrections, social services. All three branches of government are affected. And statistics show that even with our best efforts, we're losing ground. Addiction casts a wide net. It does not care if you are unemployed or have a good job with a great training. It touches everyone, the old and the young, the unemancipated school-age teen, professionals, mothers of young children, fathers, grandparents caring for extended family. It doesn't distinguish between socioeconomic groups, and it never has. The difference today is the abundance of highly addictive substances and an underground marketplace, more robust and more responsive to consumer demand than I suspect most of us can imagine. The causes of addiction are as diverse as the people who become addicted. However, mental health disorders in particular are frequently linked to substance abuse. Our tri-branch task force that my good friend Alice Emmons and I share chairs with co-chairing that group is charged with addressing drug abuse and so-called co-occurring disorders in the criminal justice arena. In doing so, the task force, I hope, will soon consider a focus on outreach and engage in a public dialogue. This would be a praiseworthy objective, to be sure, but I think in discussing the problem, language will be the key. No finger-pointing. This is one of the risks of the current situation, is that, you know, we can all say, well, this could be done better, this could be done better. Finger-pointing is not going to help us move in the direction that we need to go. So finger-pointing is something we're going to have to avoid. And it's also going to be necessary to wean ourselves from the use of jargon like co-occurring disorders. While these shorthand terms are useful for those of us who are involved, they also, I would suggest, have the undesired effect of creating in the casual observer's mind, the public's mind, the people that we have got to begin to talk to, it creates a sense of detachment from the problem of addiction and makes it sound as though it can only be addressed by professionals. And the point is that it's not a problem that only a professional can address, or that responsibility to address the problem of addiction is not shared. Addiction is not only a problem that the neighbor in town, like mine, suffers from. We ignore a truth to talk about this problem in clinical terms when, in fact, it must be understood that this is a human problem, both rooted in and affecting every one of us and our communities. Vermont towns are not alone in this battle. The societal scourge of addiction, like a leech, has attached every community it touches. I was surprised recently, some of you may have heard this on public radio, when I read about a Wisconsin state representative whose daughter is a heroin addict and is now serving time in prison for transporting and dealing drugs. The authorities in her local community in Wisconsin were reported to have sent a message to drug dealers, "Don't ply your trade here, not in my house, because we will find you and you will regret it." Wisconsin authorities, and so do we, say we will harshly punish those who undermine efforts to combat addiction by transporting and selling drugs. And the public, in truth, responds very well to this sort of tough-on-crime message. And make no mistake, this is an important policy to the criminal justice system. But that does not mean it's effective to change individual addictive behavior. If the idea is that rigorous law enforcement alone will slow and eventually eliminate drug use altogether, that hasn't happened. Tough on crime is a well-understood catchphrase. Smart on this kind of crime is needed too. Many of you are addressing the problem with smart, innovative, and grassroots approaches, and I commend you for your commitment and the work you're doing. But as a friend who's the Chief Justice in another state said recently about that state, thanks for what you're doing, but do more. In nearly every state, opiate use has skyrocketed. And the present drug court model cannot keep up. In that state, where my friend is chief, they graduated recently only 3 people from a drug court after an 18-month program. So I think we must begin to recognize response measures are not the solution. One idea I have is maybe in a meeting like this one, we would start by identifying each of the interest groups that are involved in trying to address this difficult issue. We would start by identifying and celebrating the limits to what it is each of our different governmental systems can do. Celebrating and recognizing the limits to our authority in a way that would note the gaps in the response system that is now trying to address the problem of addiction and related criminal behavior. And we should include the hospitals and medical community in this conversation too. There's an important benefit to this approach. Identifying our limits would reaffirm our commitment to the rule of law in the face of this incredibly difficult problem and acknowledge our intent to remain faithful to our mandates under the law and the Constitution. And in doing so, I expect we would embrace a principle that I think underlies our democracy and our Constitution, that we are a participatory democracy, and that government on its own does not have all the answers. And without the collective will of the people, solving this problem is not going to happen. Many of you have already begun taking steps in that direction in your own communities to coalesce neighbors, and I congratulate you. It's a tough message to get out. Tough on crime is part of the solution, but addiction is a more stubborn problem that we have to address in a much more broad way. The problems with addiction include the intersection of underlying causes of isolation, trauma, mental health disorder, joblessness, among others. It's a tall order to begin to address this in a different way than perhaps what we're used to. But Vermonters, I think, can rise to the challenge. Our strong sense of community in this state and our civic responsibility, our commitment to civic responsibility, I think make Vermont uniquely suited to bring about real change in a way that would lead the rest of the country. Vermonters have shown time and time again, from our town meeting traditions to the valiant responses of so many after Hurricane Irene, that we are willing to engage with our neighbors to effectively solve problems. I believe when we put our minds to it, this time will be no different. The criminal justice system cannot solve the drug problem, but with leadership and communities gathered together, working together, I think we can address the root causes of this problem. Thank you very much for your attendance here today, and thank you for listening to me, too.